Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Extortion, Conspiracy, and Property Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On October 6, 2015, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in Ocasio v. U.S. Ocasio challenges his conviction under the Hobbs Act for conspiracy to commit extortion, which arose from an alleged kickback scheme under which police officers funneled wrecked automobiles to a particular repair shop in exchange for monetary payments. The question before the court is whether a conspiracy to commit extortion requires that the conspirators agree to obtain property from someone outside the conspiracy. To discuss the case, we have Timothy O'Toole, who is a lawyer at Miller and Chevalier. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Mr. O'Toole.
Today we're going to talk about the case of Ocasio versus United States, which is a Supreme Court case that deals with a pretty simple issue of criminal law, but has several other issues that are lurking in the case. And so we'll talk about the issue that's in front of the Supreme Court that the court heard argument on last month. But then I think we'll talk about kind of the more important issues and some of the themes that are lurking in the case. The question presented in Ocasio versus United States is when there is a group of people, you have a police officer from Baltimore who was accused of paying or receiving a kickback from a car repair company that in exchange for the police officer sending customers to the car company when he had discovered it in the course of his official duties that cars needed repair work. Police officers obviously respond to a lot of traffic accidents, and during the accident, the police officer, Mr. Ocasio, was charged with sending these cars to get repaired at a particular shop, and then the shop owners were charged with paying him kickbacks in exchange for doing that. So that was kind of the basic fact pattern in Ocasio, and the question was, under the Hobbs Act, which is a federal criminal law that was designed to prevent extortion by public officials under color of law, that under the Hobbs Act, the question was, the way that the charge works is that you have to be extorting the property of another. And it's clear that what the police officer had been charged with doing and was convicted of doing was using his office in order to exchange the property of the shop owners. So no question there that seems like a Hobbs Act case. The twist was that the prosecutors had also charged conspiracy. Now, conspiracy is generally an agreement between two people to do something illegal. And what Mr. Ocasio argues in front of the Supreme Court and has argued in the courts below was that you can't conspire to violate the Hobbs Act when it involves the property of another with the person, that is the shop owners, who gave you the property. That is, that might be a Hobbs Act violation, but it's not a conspiracy charge, because if you have to conspire to take the property of another, then you need somebody outside the bribe payer, for lack of a better term, and the bribe recipient. You need somebody else that you're conspiring to take the property of in order to get a conspiracy charge. So that's the question at the heart of the Ocasio case. But there are some other issues that are kind of lurking in the case, because while it's possible that the government's argument appears to be, and they are at the argument the court seemed to suggest, that many of the justices thought that this argument didn't work textually because, you know, Mr. Ocasio was, at least under the government's theory, was agreeing to take the property of another, that is the shop owner, and therefore he had an agreement, and an agreement was the heart of the conspiracy. And so that agreement with the bribe payer, it was enough to constitute a conspiracy charge. But the problem is that, and it's a problem that's more endemic to the criminal justice system generally, is that essentially turns one crime into two. And so what you not only have is you have the Hobbs Act violation, but then you have a conspiracy that is going to always be present in any of these cases. And so that is kind of gets to the heart of more systemic problem in the criminal justice system, and that is the problem of vast prosecutorial discretion and these crimes that can be stacked upon each other based on the same conduct. And it sounds like from the argument that issue may not be reached in the Ocasio case, but it's an issue that has been driving the court in various areas of criminal law over the past 4 or 5 years. It's a phenomenon that the justices referred to in a recent opinion as over-criminalization, and it's a phenomenon that has been, you know, talked about on Capitol Hill. It's been talked about in the courts, and that's the situation where you have all of these federal crimes that govern the same conduct, and they're fairly broad and they're fairly vague, and they give prosecutors substantial power, because the more crimes that you can charge, the higher sentence that a defendant faces, and the higher sentence a defendant faces, the better the chance is that the defendant is going to plead guilty to something that either they didn't do, or that it doesn't, or that a jury may not convict them of. And so that's one of the issues that's kind of lurking at the heart of the Ocasio case. Another issue that is really lurking in the Ocasio case is a sort of federalism issue. And that is, not only do these charges apply when you're dealing with federal officials, but the police officer in the Ocasio case was a Baltimore police officer. And so you have this vast prosecutorial discretion, not only in the federal arena, but it's been reaching out to what is pretty clearly state law conduct. And so that's kind of the other issue lurking in another big issue lurking in the Ocasio case. And I guess the final issue that's really lurking there is the problem of the conspiracy statute and the problem of conspiracy statutes generally. I mean, conspiracies are generally referred to as kind of the prosecutor's darling. And the reason for that is that once the government is able to sustain a conspiracy charge, their ability to try a case and win a trial goes up substantially, because conspiracy allows for the admission of all sorts of evidence that in any other case wouldn't come in front of the jury, because there is an exception to the hearsay rule. It's called the co-conspirator exception. And once you've charged a conspiracy, or even if you don't charge a conspiracy sometimes, but you can, the prosecutor can just tell the court that they think there's a conspiracy, even if they've charged something else. The co-conspirator exception can be invoked to let in all sorts of out-of-court statements, hearsay, things that were supposedly said by someone else that then come into evidence in front of the jury. And that's often the way that the prosecutors get all sorts of unreliable, or at least traditionally unreliable, information in front of juries. And so the bigger the conspiracy statute, the more times they can charge conspiracy, the more trials can be had with evidence that otherwise wouldn't come in. And so that's another issue that's lurking in Ocasio, because, again, if the government is able to expand the types of cases in which they can have conspiracies, here where the statute says that you have to try and be extorting the property of another, and the only two people who agree are the one who the public official and the one who's actually consensually giving their property to the public official, then you greatly expand the scope of conspiracies in that way. You also greatly expand the ability of prosecutors to try these cases. And so you've, again, kind of vastly upped the government's power. So you've done it in three different ways. One is that you have, you know, increased the types of conspiracy cases they can bring. Two is that you have increased the reach of a federal statute that also applies to state officials, so you've increased the power of the federal government. And then the third that's lurking in the case is that you have increased prosecutorial discretion, because the fact of the matter is that at the oral argument, some of the justices expressed concerns about the scope of prosecutorial ability to reach more conduct if they construed the statute the way that the United States wanted the statute to be construed. And what the government's response to that was is that they would be responsible in construing the statute, and they would only apply it to active participants in the Hobbs Act conduct. That is, so if you have the bribe payer and the bribe recipient, those would be the active participants. But there might be, because of the scope of federal law, other people in the chain that you might be able to apply that to. That is, the person who processes the check that is the bribe, if it's paid with a bribe, or the person who puts the cash in the bag. So if you pay in cash, the government disclaimed any desire to expand this, the reach of the statute to that conduct, although it claimed that it could if it wanted to. And so the third big kind of real problem here is that when you have that sort of broad statute, I mean, this is the overcrim phenomenon. When you have a broad statute, it greatly increases prosecutorial discretion. And when prosecutors have more discretion, they can apply criminal statutes in a way that allows them to apply them to people they don't like and not apply them to people they do, which is not nearly as much of a danger with a statute that's much more tightly crafted and where there's a lot less discretion to apply it. And so even though the Ocasio case presents at bottom a pretty simple issue of statutory construction about whether or not trying to obtain property from another and then you conspire to do that, whether or not that also violates the conspiracy provisions of the Hobbs Act, the real questions in this case, I think, are much broader. It's not clear the court will reach them because I think the court, at least from argument, may seem to view this as a simple issue of statutory construction. But going forward, I think the implications of this case could be quite large if the court comes out the way that it looks like it's going to come out at argument.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.